Chapter 25. When recommended by the singular eagerness of her voice, and placing the reins in her hands a quite unnecessary precaution, considering the state of their Aki stepped out, and went forward through the snow till she could see no more of him. No sooner was he gone than Laura, with a rapidity which contrasted strangely with her previous stillness, made fast the reins to the corner of the phaeton, and slipping out on the opposite side, ran back with all her might down the hill, till, coming to an opening in the fence, she scrambled through it, and plunged into the copse which bordered this portion of the lane. Here she stood in hiding under one of the large bushes, clinging so closely to its umbrage, as to seem but a portion of its mass, and listening intently for the faintest sound of pursuit. But nothing disturbed the stillness save the occasional slipping of gathered snow from the boughs, or the rustle of some wild animal over the crisp flake bespattered herbage. At length, apparently convinced that her former companion was either unable to find her, or not anxious to do so, in the present strange state of affairs, she crept out from the bushes, and in less than an hour found herself again approaching the door of the Prospect Hotel. As she drew near, Laura could see that, far from being wrapped in darkness, as she might have expected, there were ample signs that all the tenants were on the alert, lights moving about the open space in front. Satisfaction was expressed in her face when she discerned that no reappearance of her baritone and his pony carriage was causing this sensation. But it speedily gave way to grief and dismay when she saw by the lights the form of a man borne on a stretcher by two others into the porch of the hotel. "I have caused all this," apostrophe she murmured between her quivering lips. "He has murdered him." Apostrophe apostrophe running forward to the door, as he hastily asked of the first person she met, if the man on the stretcher was dead. "No, miss," apostrophe said the laborer addressed, eyeing her up and down as an unexpected apparition. "He is still alive, they say, but not sensible. He either fell, or was pushed over the waterfall. 'Tis thought that he was pushed. He is the gentleman who came here just now with the old lord, and went out afterward, as is thought, with a stranger who had come a little earlier. Anyhow, that's as I had it." Apostrophe apostrophe, Laura entered the house, and acknowledging without the least reserve that she was the injured man's wife, had soon installed herself as head nurse by the bed on which he lay. When the two surgeons who had been sent for arrived, she learned from them that his wounds were so severe as to leave but a slender hope of recovery, it being little short of miraculous that he was not killed on the spot, which his enemy had evidently reckoned to be the case. She knew who that enemy was, and shuddered. Laura watched all night, but her husband knew nothing of her presence. During the next day he slightly recognized her, and in the evening was able to speak. He informed the surgeons that, as was surmised, he had been pushed over the cascade by Signor Smithozzi. But he communicated nothing to her who nursed him, not even replying to her remarks. He nodded courteously at any act of attention she rendered, and that was all. In a day or two it was declared that everything favored his recovery, notwithstanding the severity of his injuries. Full search was made for Smithozzi, but as yet there was no intelligence of his whereabouts, though the repentant Laura communicated all she knew. As far as could be judged, he had come back to the carriage, after searching out the way, and finding the young lady missing, had looked about for her till he was tired, then had driven on to Cliff Martin, sold the horse and carriage next morning, and disappeared, probably by one of the departing coaches which ran thence to the nearest station, the only difference from his original program being that he had gone alone. During the days and weeks of that long and tedious recovery, Laura watched by her husband's bedside with a zeal and assiduity which would have considerably extenuated any fault save one of such magnitude as hers. That her husband did not forgive her was soon obvious. Nothing that she could do in the way of smoothing pillows, easing his position, shifting bandages, or administering draughts, could win from him more than a few measured words of thankfulness, such as he would probably have uttered to any other woman on earth who had performed these particular services for him. "Dear, dear James," apostrophe she said one day, bending her face upon the bed in an excess of emotion. "How you have suffered. It has been too cruel. I am more glad you are getting better than I can say. I have prayed for it, and I am sorry for what I have done. I am innocent of the worst, and I hope you will not think me so very bad, James. Apostrophe apostrophe, oh no. On the contrary, I shall think you very good as a nurse, apostrophe he answered, the caustic severity of his tone being apparent through its weakness. Laura let fall two or three silent tears, and said no more that day. Somehow or other Signor Smith, as I seemed to be making good his escape. It transpired that he had not taken a passage in either of the suspected coaches, though he had certainly got out of the county. Altogether, the chance of finding him was problematical. Not only did Captain Northbrook survive his injuries, but it soon appeared that in the course of a few weeks he would find himself little, if any, the worse for the catastrophe. It could also be seen that Laura, while secretly hoping for her husband's forgiveness for a piece of folly, of which she saw the enormity more clearly every day, was in great doubt as to what her future relations with him would be. Moreover, to add to the complication, whilst she, as a runaway wife, was unforgiven by her husband, she and her husband, as a runaway couple, were unforgiven by her father, who had never once communicated with either of them since his departure from the inn. But her immediate anxiety was to win the pardon of her husband, who possibly might be bearing in mind, as he lay upon his couch, the familiar words of Brabantio, "As he has deceived her father, and may he." Apostrophe apostrophe, matters went on thus till Captain Northbrook was able to walk about. He then removed with his wife to quiet apartments on the south coast, and here his recovery was rapid. Walking up the cliffs one day, supporting him by her arm as usual, she said to him, simply, "James, if I go on as I am going now, and always attend to your smallest want, and never think of anything but devotion to you, will you try to like me a little?" Apostrophe apostrophe, "It is a thing I must carefully consider, apostrophe," he said, with the same gloomy dryness which characterized all his words to her now. "When I have considered, I will tell you." Apostrophe apostrophe, he did not tell her that evening, though she lingered long at her routine work of making his bedroom comfortable, putting the light so that it would not shine into his eyes, seeing him fall asleep, and then retiring noiselessly to her own chamber. When they met in the morning at breakfast, and as he had asked him as usual how he had passed the night, she added timidly, in the silence which followed his reply, "Have you considered?" Apostrophe apostrophe, "No, I have not considered sufficiently to give you an answer." Apostrophe apostrophe, Laura sighed, but to no purpose. And the day wore on with intense heaviness to her, and the customary modicum of strength gained to him. The next morning she put the same question, and looked up despairingly in his face, as though her whole life hung upon his reply. "Yes, I have considered, apostrophe," he said. "Ah, apostrophe apostrophe, we must part. Apostrophe apostrophe, oh James. Apostrophe apostrophe, I cannot forgive you, no man would. Enough is settled upon you to keep you in comfort, whatever your father may do. I shall sell out, and disappear from this hemisphere." Apostrophe apostrophe, "You have absolutely decided?" Apostrophe apostrophe, she asked miserably. "I have nobody now to care for, apostrophe, I have absolutely decided, apostrophe," he shortly returned. "We had better part here. You will go back to your father. There is no reason why I should accompany you, since my presence would only stand in the way of the forgiveness he will probably grant you, if you appear before him alone. We will say farewell to each other in 3 days from this time. I have calculated on being ready to go on that day. apostrophe, apostrophe, bowed down with trouble, she withdrew to her room, and the 3 days were passed by her husband in writing letters, and attending to other business matters, saying hardly a word to her the while. The morning of departure came, but before the horses had been put in, to take the severed twain in different directions, out of sight of each other, possibly forever, the postman arrived with the morning letters. There was one for the captain, none for her, there were never any for her. However, on this occasion something was enclosed for her in his, which he handed her. She read it and looked up helpless. "My dear father is dead." Apostrophe, apostrophe, she said. In a few moments she added, in a whisper, "I must go to the manor to bury him. Dot dot, will you go with me, James?" Apostrophe, apostrophe, he musingly looked out of the window. "I suppose it is an awkward and melancholy undertaking for a woman alone," apostrophe, he said coldly. "Well, well, my poor uncle. Yes, I'll go with you, and see you through the business." Apostrophe, apostrophe, so they went off together instead of asunder, as planned. It is unnecessary to record the details of the journey, or of the sad week which followed it at her father's house. Lord Quantock's seat was a fine old mansion standing in its own park, and there were plenty of opportunities for husband and wife either to avoid each other, or to get reconciled, if they were so minded, which one of them was at least. Captain Northbrook was not present at the reading of the will. She came to him afterward, and found him packing up his papers, intending to start next morning, now that he had seen her through the turmoil occasioned by her father's death. "He has left me everything that he could." Apostrophe, apostrophe, she said to her husband. "James, will you forgive me now, and stay?" Apostrophe, apostrophe, I cannot stay. Apostrophe, apostrophe, why not? Apostrophe, apostrophe, I cannot stay, apostrophe, he repeated. "But why?" Apostrophe, apostrophe, I don't like you. Apostrophe, apostrophe, he acted up to his word. When she came downstairs the next morning she was told that he had gone. Laura bore her double bereavement as best she could. The vast mansion in which she had hitherto lived, with all its historic contents, had gone to her father's successor in the title, but her own was no unhandsome one. Around lay the undulating park, studded with trees a dozen times her own age. Beyond it, the wood. Beyond the wood, the farms. All this fair and quiet scene was hers. She nevertheless remained a lonely, repentant, depressed being, who would have given the greater part of everything she possessed to ensure the presence and affection of that husband whose very austerity and phlegm qualities, that had formerly led to the alienation between them, seemed now to be adorable features in his character. She hoped and hoped again, but all to no purpose. Captain Northbrook did not alter his mind and return. He was quite a different sort of man from one who altered his mind, that she was at last despairingly forced to admit. And then she left off hoping, and settled down to a mechanical routine of existence which in some measure dulled her grief, but at the expense of all her natural animation, and the sprightly willfulness which had once charmed those who knew her, though it was perhaps all the while a factor in the production of her unhappiness. To say that her beauty quite departed as the years rolled on would be to overstate the truth. Time is not a merciful master, as we all know, and he was not likely to act exceptionally in the case of a woman who had mental troubles to bear in addition to the ordinary weight of years. Be this as it may, 11 other winters came and went, and Laura Northbrook remained the lonely mistress of house and lands without once hearing of her husband. Every probability seemed to favor the assumption that he had died in some foreign land, and offers for her hand were not few as the probability verged on certainty with the long lapse of time. But the idea of remarriage seemed never to have entered her head for a moment. Whether she continued to hope even now for his return could not be distinctly ascertained. At all events, she lived a life unmodified in the slightest degree from that of the first 6 months of his absence. This 12th year of Laura's loneliness, and the 30th of her life drew on apace, and the season approached that had seen the unhappy adventure for which she so long had suffered. Christmas promised to be rather wet than cold, and the trees on the outskirts of Laura's estate dripped monotonously from day to day upon the turnpike road which B ordered them. On an afternoon in this week between 3 and 4 o'clock a hired fly might have been seen driving along the highway at this point, and on reaching the top of the hill it stopped. A gentleman of middle age alighted from the vehicle. "You need drive no farther," apostrophe he said to the coachman. "The rain seems to have nearly ceased. I'll stroll a little way, and return on foot to the inn by dinner time." Apostrophe apostrophe, the flyman touched his hat, turned the horse, and drove back as directed. When he was out of sight, the gentleman walked on, but he had not gone far before the rain again came down pitilessly, though of this the pedestrian took little heed, going leisurely onward till he reached Laura's park gate, which he passed through. The clouds were thick, and the days were short, so that by the time he stood in front of the mansion it was dark. In addition to this, his appearance, which on alighting from the carriage had been untarnished, partook now of the character of a drenched wayfarer not too well blessed with this world's goods. He halted for no more than a moment at the front entrance, and going round to the servants' quarter, as if he had a preconceived purpose in so doing, there rang the bell. When a page came to him, he inquired if they would kindly allow him to dry himself by the kitchen fire. The page retired, and after a murmured colloquy returned with the cook, who informed the wet and muddy man that, though it was not her custom to admit strangers, she should have no particular objection to his drying himself, the night being so damp and gloomy. Therefore the wayfarer entered and sat down by the fire. "The owner of this house is a very rich gentleman, no doubt?" Apostrophe apostrophe he asked, as he watched the meat turning on the spit. "'Tis not a gentleman, but a lady," apostrophe said the cook. "A widow, I presume?" Apostrophe apostrophe, a sort of widow. "Poor soul, her husband is gone abroad, and has never been heard of for many years." Apostrophe apostrophe. Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.